Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey, before we get into the podcast today, just wanted to remind you that you can be a member of CinemaSins at Patreon. Join the Sin Club, I think is what we're saying now. Join the Sin Club. And there's lots of fun reasons to do that. Among them, the idea that you get even more bonus podcast amazingness every month, both the Sincast podcast, as well as Behind the Sins podcast, talk about a certain topic picked by you. One of the members, and that comes right into your own personalized podcast feed. Lots of other fun stuff comes with being a member of the Sin Club, so go check it out at Patreon. It's patreon.com/cinemasins, and you can check out all the details there.
And I'm just so happy to hear somebody yelling out "Rightful Rudder." It makes me hard.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins from CinemaSins.
Hello, hello.
And from TV Sins and various things, Aaron Dicer.
Heidely ho, Cinerinos.
Is on here for a mini pod,
yeah,
of Greyhound, the new Tom Hanks movie, that is only on Apple Plus.
Yeah,
that's
was supposed to be a theatrical release in June, and Apple Plus bought it for a pretty penny.
It's weird. I had not heard of this, although I didn't pay much attention to the summer schedule before COVID and everything. So I've told Jonathan this many times. I've had no idea what was supposed to come out and what what's just a streaming VOD thing and whatever. And this movie, clearly, I mean, there was no way this was just like some, you know, hey, we just kind of did this project, let's come out with this on VOD. You know, that, there's no way this movie was that. But I didn't realize it was supposed to come out in June. Anyway, it's on Apple Plus. I watched this on an iPhone. This is the first time I've ever watched a big movie release on an iPhone. And, you know, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It wasn't the best way to experience a movie like this, but it wasn't bad. I was immersed. So, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah, we had like varying degrees of, I think we covered the gamut, didn't we? You watched it on your phone. Jonathan watched it on his computer, and I watched it on my, you know, 77-inch TV. So we kind of covered the gamut of experiencing this, which I think is valid because people are going to be experiencing this in all those different ways. It's kind of the new normal, you know. So
I just like that. That's the gamut, though. It's phone, computer, or 77.
Right, right.
Don't watch it on a 40-inch.
Right, right.
No. Nobody's doing that.
If you're doing that, watch it on a phone.
Either your iPhone or a 77-inch TV. That's pretty
much
what it comes
down
to. This movie. Let's go right into it. I think because I had no idea what this movie was about at all before I came into it. I don't know, man. I had no expectations, but this movie really got me excited. Like I was excited. I like to get in, like I could get into some Barrett territory here where it's like, you know, like, you know, this, this really tweaked my nipples or something like that. You know, you know, the movie is an hour and a half and it's just full blown intensity on the high seas during World War II. And I'm just so happy to hear somebody yelling out right full rudder. It makes me hard. every time I hear that, I'm like, oh my God, the action has started. I very much liked this movie. I liked it. I loved it.
So if I understand correctly, this is based on a book called The Good Shepherd by, I think it's C.S. Forrester. So this isn't an actual event that happened, but it's based on events. Like it's based on events that happened, I guess, right?
I
like
think
it's
how kind they're of saying it. I think
historical fiction.
Yeah, I think how they're saying is it's based on a real situation, not necessarily like that these events happened, but boats did have to cross, you know, that expanse and not be protected by air cover, you know, for a certain amount of time. So that is a real situation that happened, and then everything inside this is fiction. But it's kind of based on that historical accuracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So should we talk about that? I guess so. It's what it's about. I guess for if anybody's listening to the non-spoiler part that hasn't seen it, it's what Tom Hanks is. It's his first crossing, right? It's his first like ship, right?
Yep.
And first command. His character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he has to. Poor dude has to leave Elizabeth Shue to go.
I know.
To go do this. And how weird is that, by the way? I was thinking about that. Like Elizabeth Shue, like, you know, like Ralph Macchio's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and now she's Tom Hanks's girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, like 35 years later or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's so weird. So he's leading this ship across this territory. He's leading a convoy, right? And it's I got the impression it was ships from different countries, right? Because there was like a Greek ship and.
Well, I think you're dealing with just, you know, crossing the Atlantic. You know, they're coming into contact with other merchant ships, different things like that. But his responsibility was for that American convoy. And then also two British naval ships, I think, were in that convoy as well.
Right.
Coming back across. Yeah.
And then there's these the German U-boats are kind of tracking them and causing some problems. And then it's 90 minutes of them trying to evade these U-boats and also attack the U-boats themselves. I guess is kind of the simplest way to put it.
You may have said this, and forgive me if I missed it, but these boats are delivering supplies. Mm-hmm. To Europe, basically.
Where yes.
They have, and it's, I guess it's a wide variety of supplies. It's ammunition, it's food, it's medical, all that.
Yeah.
The movie sort of starts off with Hanks talking to Elizabeth Shue and they're sort of on the verge of getting married and everything, but he's going to do this, he's going to have his first command over this convoy and everything. And the first like 10 minutes or so, you're like, okay, kind of easing into this. And then suddenly it's, it's just nonstop after that.
It's like he gets served breakfast and then he's about to reprimand a couple guys that got in a fight. And then all of a sudden it's just like shit hits the fan. And
they were arguing over Silver Surfer again, like they always do. They're arguing over the Silver Surfer.
That's the common naval argument.
Yeah.
I wanted to jump off.
Quentin Tarantino was brought in to write some of this, right?
Yeah,
what I heard. I wanted to jump off what you said, Chris, because I had very similar feelings. This movie owned me in a lot of ways. I really enjoyed it. And as I'm watching, especially toward the end, I'm just thinking Chris is going to love this movie, if for no other reason, how authentically naval it feels. Like it just feels like, you know, Tom Hanks did his homework, right? You know, because he wrote this script too. And you know, he's thinking about, here's what they actually say, here's who they actually are. You just feel the authenticity of the transmissions, of how it worked, all that kind of stuff. And it felt so real. It just felt like you were really on the Greyhound.
Yeah. One way, there's a lot of little nice tricks I felt like they did in this, where they made things really just on that they really ramped up the intensity. when you have somebody like the guy who's doing the sonar, he's like, I have a contact bearing, so on and so forth. About halfway through what he says, the person relaying the message starts relaying his message and then gets about halfway through his when there's another guy telling his message over. And like, and so like, there's none of this waiting. Like, I have a bearing contact, blah, 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 blah. Okay. He says he has a bearing contact, blah, 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 blah. Oh, he has a bearing contact. Oh, you know, it's like, he starts saying it, then it goes straight to the radio. Then it goes to the captain's ears. And like, they do stuff like that. And it's just nonstop, like this constant, like, and then you start getting into the head of Captain Krause in this whole thing. Like, what do you have to do next? What do you have to constantly be thinking about during this whole thing? Because there's these U-boats, they can't really detect them in a normal manner. They're just kind of, they're listening for like machinery and propellers and stuff like that underwater. And a lot of times they're not able to hear that type of thing. They'll hear a message from one of the ships saying, we got a contact somewhere. And then they try to detect it, and they can't really do it from their position. You have to think about that World War II technology back in the day too, like how the message isn't getting there as fast. But it's just constantly, yeah, exactly what you were saying, Aaron. Like, you know, it feels super authentic. Like, you feel like you're like, this is exactly how it would go.
Even authentic down to the moral decisions they're making. The idea of, I have to decide, do I go save this ship or pull these people out of the water? Or do I go do this or do... And it's like, those are actual decisions that human beings had to make. Can you imagine having to make a decision about whose life is more valuable or which, you know, like, it's just like, I am personally grateful I've never had to be in that position. Yeah. And it's just so seeing it in a movie like this brings it home to me, kind of those moral quandaries of, you know, human beings had to make those calls, and man, I just don't know how you do it.
And it all comes down to, you've got your mission that you're trying to you got your mission, but you also have, you know, a moral side to a lot of things too. So like, but nothing trumps the mission. So you have to like, can I get away with doing this right now? And that's, you know, you have to make these cold, cold decisions on these things. I don't know. There's not much to spoil really, but, I'm going to go ahead and give this one a full on A. This is, I really wasn't expecting this much of a great movie. Actually, I didn't know what I was going to expect, but I didn't think it was going to be this.
Wow.
Jonathan, I don't feel like we've heard any of kind of your thoughts on the movie at all.
I liked it. I definitely don't think I'm on the same level that you two are, because of the way this movie is told and the way it's done. I mean, you obviously don't get a lot of room for characters and, you know, character depth and stuff like that, which is probably just something I, you know, when I go to a movie, I kind of prefer. But I just don't know if this movie, I don't know. I really enjoyed it, but I'm definitely not on that level. I'm in the B territory. So it's a very solid, good movie, in my opinion. It moves very quickly. Obviously it's only 90 minutes. I love these like real time, type scenarios. And obviously Hanks definitely did his homework, because there's a lot to take in, to the point where I got confused and had to rewind and make sure I was hearing things correctly, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, it is okay.
I love the look of it. I really, really enjoyed that. The water itself, like, I've never seen in my mind, I've never seen water shot like that menacing. Like, that water just looked, I mean, I'm also kind of terrified of like the ocean and stuff, so that probably doesn't help. But like, that water like legit scared me. Like, I can't even imagine, if anything happened to where you got thrown into there. And it was just so expansive, and, you know, there was just, you know, nothing for miles, and just that kind of fear of isolation. They were out there on their own. And then there's a few moments that we can talk more about in spoilers, I guess, that really hit me in the right way. But, yeah, I'm going to give it a B. I thought it was just, I thought it was a good movie. There's nothing, you know, nothing really wrong with it, but just didn't quite get to that love level.
The the spoiler section I think will be for kind of those moments in the movie that you experience. But no, I'm actually kind of with you, Jonathan. I'm at around an A minus, somewhere in that range. I think there are two ways this movie might miss you. Number one, like Jonathan said, it is very technical, and we kind of talked about the authenticity. And so, if that doesn't appeal to you, there is a lot of that here. So if you're not somebody who likes that kind of stuff, it could feel a little bit like, you know, reading an instruction manual at times. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that level of trying to keep up with the technical aspect of it. That's not fair to the movie, in my opinion, just because it's, you know, it's much broader than that. And it's adrenalizing in a way that a manual isn't. But I think the more salient point you made has to do with the character development. This movie is about one character. It really is. It's all about the Tom Hanks character. And I'm okay with that. That's why I love the movie. I love the movie for doing this, but it can make it feel a little bit shallow, I think. And especially if you're not connecting to that character, then it very much just becomes informational. It becomes very plot-driven. It becomes very much about, you know, the actual action and events that are happening. But I connected enough to what I think they were saying with that primary, pretty much only developed character in the movie. I connected enough to what they were doing with that I still, you know, loved the movie. But I think that's another possible downfall, is it's really focused in on the captain character to the exclusion of the crew. And in fact, I heard Tom Hanks talking about this in an interview. He actually wanted to replicate the authenticity of how there were different crew members on different shifts, and at the end of the day, the studio or the notes process or the production process or whatever was like, no, we really kind of have to stay consistent with the same faces, or the audience is really going to get confused about, you know, why is this person doing the sonar during these hours and this person doing the sonar during these hours. So he was really focused on the authenticity and the technical aspect of it, to the exclusion of necessarily the character aspect of it. Yeah.
I think Hanks is great too. And I think one thing I love about his career, I rewatched Dragnet the other day, which is from 1987. So that's like a very different era of Hanks, where he's basically just doing comedies. And I remember watching that and thinking like, oh yeah, I kind of miss this Hanks. But then you watch something like this and it's just really cool. Like, just he knows his strengths better than I think just about any actor. And he knows what he can do well. And I find his career fascinating. And I love that we've gotten all these different versions of him throughout the years. And I think he's playing like with this and like Sully, which I think is actually kind of an underrated movie. Or maybe people love that. I don't know. I really like it. And even like Bridge of Spies and stuff like that. I just feel like he's picking the right vehicles for him. And he always makes the movie more interesting than, even if it's not that good, he's always going to make it, you know, a lot better just by him being there. And this is definitely a good movie, but I think he's excellent in this role. So Hanks, I was definitely on board with him.
Hanks always has his, always is leaving his girlfriend before marrying her, isn't he? He's always doing that.
In Dragnet, he's just a slut. So,
but like, you know, he did that in Castaway. Obviously, Sleepless in Seattle, he's away from his potential girlfriend, from, you know, 3,000 miles away from his potential girlfriend in that movie. But I don't know if it's as prominent as his peeing is in movies. it is a feature that happens quite a bit. He leaves the girl he loves, and the peeing thing was a cracked thing that I had read, but this thing right here, I was like, God, he does this a lot in movies, doesn't he? Let's go on to spoilers.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Basically,
is Kaiser Sose. Luke's father is actually Darth Vader. She's the sister and the daughter.
No. I'm reading the books.
There's not much, but I do want to address this whole thing about the character development, because that was one thing that I was noting during this whole thing, and I just realized, like halfway through it, that I was glad that they didn't do this.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a point even, like, I think it would have been tremendously inconsistent if they kept showing him getting piles of food that he never ate, and then like for 10 minutes went down into the hall somewhere and found some guy to start talking about his feelings and like what he needs to do when he gets back. And like, you know, all this stuff. And then, you know, he dies in one of the attacks or whatever. If they had spent time on that, then you would have never gotten, the movie could still be intense, obviously. I mean, it could still be a Crimson Tide or a Hunt for October or something like that. But like, I felt like this movie just wanted to, as soon as the intensity was ramped up, it didn't want to release that, because the whole time this guy can't even eat. And every time he's considering eating, he's like, but you can see it on his face, but what happens if something happens, you know, yeah. Like what do I mean, if I start eating, then those are precious seconds I may not get back if I need to run back up to the deck and everything. So I was actually glad that it wasn't like that. I think we could have maybe gotten into a couple of characters or some familiar actors I've seen before. The guy who plays the sonar guy, he's in that is it that Love movie, the Gaspar Noé's Love.
Oh, maybe
he's in a lot of stuff. Let me see if I can find him, but anyway, but yeah, there's a few people that you might recognize and you might say, all right, I'd like to learn more, but I just found myself just caught up in the action of everything. If there was anything about the action that I wish it had done more of, there it's the final attack where they're like, where they show the, you know, they'll show a missile getting shot and another missile getting shot, and Hanks has to figure out how to maneuver the boat in between the two rockets or whatever. And when he says right full rudder or left full rudder, we see what the ship does at mm-hmm. the time and everything. The only time it really ever does that is in that final action scene. Everything else is kind of like, you know, okay, well, I can assume he's turning right when he says that, but there are a lot of naval terms that I've never understood what they mean and everything. And I guess I got to go and find a glossary of them at some point. But, you know, when somebody says right full rudder and then like, then they're like, do this. And it's like, that seems to contradict the right full rudder that I just heard. You know, maybe it doesn't, but like, I couldn't picture it. But when they did that, that last big one where he's like maneuvering that ship through the torpedoes. I'm trying to find the right word, because people get pissed off when you say rockets or missiles or torpedoes and it's the wrong one. He's trying to avoid the torpedoes. You see it on screen, and they have these wide shots, these beautiful wide shots of you can actually see the trail of the torpedo in the water.
Yeah, that was fun.
And you can see the ship, and you can see him, his perspective, as he sees like one barely miss, and then he knows that there's another one coming another way, and he's like, okay, now I've got to do it this way, now that one's gone, you know, and stuff like that. So I love that type of stuff.
I will say, I found that, I forgot to mention that when I was talking about the shooting of the movie, I loved that effect, like whatever they used to do that, which I'm sure is just computers, but I found that a lot more, not to knock other older submarine movies that submarine thrillers that I love, like Das Boot or Hunt for Red October, but mm-hmm. I found that more effective than the underwater shot of the torpedo, and then it cuts back to the ship, and then it cuts back to the torpedo. I just thought that was cool. Plus, mm-hmm. that worked with the way the movie was, because the movie was just, you know, the way the movie chose to tell its story, where everything was very quickly moving and progressing. You know, if they had been doing a bunch of cutbacks, I don't think it would have worked as well. And I think Aaron said better what I meant to say. Like, the movie is not trying to develop characters, and so that's fine. I think the technical aspect of it is what bogged me down at times. Mm. But I will say, because of this movie, I probably learned a lot more about that type of situation than I would have ever known, because it kind of encouraged me to like look up things like you were talking about, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But even though there's not strictly character development, there are these really good character moments. I think the food is a really cool, like, ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get to know the character of the cook. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know if he's the cook, but he's the one serving him the food.
Yeah, yeah. He's the head chef, Stevens? Or whatever. Yeah. I don't remember.
Cleveland,
that's right. And then eventually, you don't see and I think this is really effective too. He gets killed later and you don't mm-hmm. see it. You just find Tom Hanks hears about it. And I think, isn't the way they show it is that a different person brings him food?
Yes.
I think that's how he finds out.
Yeah, and he calls him Cleveland at one point, yeah.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
And the guy's like, no, I'm whoever, Pitts.
Pitts, yeah. Yeah. I thought that was really effective, and it, you know, it actually kind of got me like, oh no, not Cleveland.
Yeah.
This guy I've seen twice.
Yeah.
But he was trying so hard to get him to eat.
Yeah. It's very effective. I really had a lot of respect for the way this movie is made. You can tell some choices were made with what they were mm-hmm. doing. For instance, it's very much a bottle episode. We don't leave the Greyhound. You know, it's not like we hop onto even other ships in the convoy at all, or into the, you know, the German U-boats. We are on the Greyhound for this entire movie. And when we're not, we're above it, right? Like we're taken to look from above. At one point, we go up beyond the clouds to see the beautiful Aurora Borealis, or whatever it would be, you know, above the clouds while mm-hmm. all the war is happening beneath, making, you know, these thematic statements. With the camera, but for the most part, we are with Tom Hanks, and even not just with the Greyhound, but with Captain Krause. And there are moments where I think we're with the sonar, and Captain Krause isn't necessarily in the room, but they are moments of things that he's learning. You know, so we are in his mind even when we're not in his presence, and it's very effective. And the director is Aaron Schneider, I guess, mm-hmm. who has done basically one other movie. Which was Get Low, 2009. Mm-hmm. So I found it very impressive. I found the writing very impressive. Mm-hmm. I think Tom Hanks is dealing very much with the idea. This is almost in some ways a love letter to Middle America in some ways. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of religion. There's a lot of praying. There's a lot of mm-hmm. kind of that stoic, just do your job, you know, kind of even at, you know, when trauma is going on around you, you just put your nose down and get it done. Kind of work ethic kind of stuff. It's very intentionally about, you know, showing his bloody feet at the end and the idea that he's been going through all this pain all day, but just hasn't even mentioned it. You know, it's mm-hmm. very much about kind of that doing the job it takes to get it done and not complaining about it kind of aesthetic. And those themes are just, you know, littered throughout this.
That's
Get Low, by the way, is an excellent movie. It's a Robert Duvall film. That's high recommend, but go ahead. Sorry.
By the way, that was that Carl Glusman, who's in Love, Gaspar Noé's Love. He's mm-hmm. also in Nocturnal Animals. He's in Devs. The boyfriend at the beginning.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But anyway, the, you know, here's the thing. I don't think I've talked about this much on the podcast, but, there is something about when you were, you know, Aaron, you were talking about how it stayed on the Greyhound the whole time. There is something about seeing tragedy from afar that I find way more effective than, say, the bomb coming off of the plane in Pearl Harbor straight down mm-hmm. There is something I've always found more, I don't know, more intense about that, because and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because I've been trained that way. If you think about news programs that you've ever seen in your life where some horrible tragedy happened and they just show this ominous house in the background and you're like, oh my God, a whole bunch of tragedies just happened there. And you just let your mind wander about it and everything. I don't know if it's that or if it's just the fact that that there is this unseen killer that's out there. And you know, that torpedo that blew up that ship that's out in the water could be anywhere right now. And there's something about that. I've never found that, like, you know, like that a lesser movie certainly would have gotten footage on another ship as it got blown up and they would have had their big, you know, like moment to show on a trailer. But, in this, as we see everything Hanks is seeing on this thing, just seeing a ship sort of just blow up off in the distance is way more effective. Every time somebody shoots a distress missile too, is another like big, like moment in these movies. Mm-hmm. And it happens enough where you're like, oh my God, you have to be like on your toes constantly in this thing. So there was something very effective about that too, keeping it on the Greyhound and not changing locations all over the place was another big plus for this.
Yeah. And I also liked, you were talking about the explosion in the distance. I don't know if this was the scene you were talking about, but this was probably my favorite scene, was when he had to choose between rescuing the people in the water or immediately going to the aid of the ship asking for his assistance. And he chooses to get the people in the water first, which ends up only being not that this shouldn't matter, but it only ends up being four people. And then you see the ship blow up. So probably quite a few more than four people die on that ship that blows up that he didn't go rescue or didn't go aid. So, you know, you kind of see like those decisions that are having to be made, like you and Aaron, you know, were talking about earlier, you know, up front and close. And there's even, you know, you've got that whole bit too, where I don't know what his actual job is on the ship, but he's the one that's, he figures out, or is this the guy you were talking about from Love, the one that figures out that they were decoys?
Yeah, I can't remember if he's the one. There's another guy on there who says, I was on a ship before that dealt with these before, and I should have known it by the sound that it made or whatever. And he was that's another thing about this movie. Is just the fact that you are going to make mistakes. It is a tendency in an action movie to have somebody like Hanks or the crew or somebody like that to be perfect in everything that they do. And they're so perfect that, aha, you know, this bad guys thought they could get it over on these guys, but haha, these guys are too smart for them. There are mistakes made in this, but they're not looked at as, oh God, what a asshole for making a mistake. It's more like, well, that's the type of thing that's going to happen at times. You know, it's, you know, you know, you're not judged based on mistakes. Obviously if you got sunk or if you did, it was a complete disaster out there, then you would be.
Yes.
But I think you get sort of points, respect points by not turning it into a disaster, by doing enough of the right thing to the point that, hey, you know, some people died. He probably could have done this or that, but when you're out there, you don't know what the right decision's going to be all the time. It's kind of the thing that you're talking about with, you know, you brought up Sully, which was the thing that, you know, that at the end, all that stuff that didn't really happen in real life, but was still fun to go through. People who like to criticize what he did, what Sully did and everything, weren't like all the flight simulator people knew exactly what had happened, like knew every detail. And it's like, well, what if you didn't know this? And what if you didn't know that? Then how would you react? And of course, nobody could pass the simulation once they didn't know these other things. It's the same thing out there. And that's what I liked. It's like you kind of own up to your mistakes and you try not to make it a disaster.
Yeah. This is a commander who is leading in humility in a lot of ways, which I really love, because you don't often see that with your hero. Like you said, they're more kind of invincible, you know, there's a masculinity to them. And this is somebody who, when, you know, a crewman is struggling just says, remember your training, boy, you know, like, or whatever he says in that moment, which I thought was beautiful. And then in another moment, his crew is celebrating the death of this sub and just be like, yeah, kill the Krauts or, you know, whatever. And he's like, you know, we got 273 of them. And he just simply states like 273 souls, you know, like, and you can tell there's an element of in him, that humility of don't forget those are human beings too, but he's not judging them for celebrating. He's not like, you know, doing the big speech and coming down on them that we're used to in movies. It's just a very simple statement that says everything. And I think that's kind of really the interesting uniqueness of this character is it's not the same type of leadership we're used to seeing in these kind of movies. It is very non-judgmental, subdued. It's not speechifying. It's just doing your job. And so, yeah, I really like that. I really like that.
One thing I was confused about, though, I did have a question about one thing. If I don't know if you guys will know the answer to this, but when the one ship that's sinking has to request permission to abandon ship, I assume that meant they were getting like on lifeboats or something. But
yeah,
like,
I think so. Yeah.
And then he's just kind of like, you know, good luck or whatever. But I'm sitting there thinking, but aren't they still in the convoy? Kind of like, I mean, they're not like, how are they not in danger still?
Oh, they're still
in
danger. Or
would the U-boat not pick them up or something because
they're so small. I don't think the U-boat's going to worry about them. They're still in danger, obviously. They need to find, you know, something better than lifeboats to get, you know, to get on. So, but I think that's kind of the point is there's so much going on that, you know, that there's this request to abandon ship and it's just like, yes, go ahead, but I've got other fish to fry, you know, right now kind of thing.
And then, you know, the other thing is that a lot of these ships can't pick up these people either because they just don't have the room. And that was one of the things that they were talking about with after they saved the three people from that one ship. Of course they lose three of their own like somewhere around that same time and everything, and they dump those three guys out into the water and give them the burial and all that. But then there's another discussion as to whether or not they're going to put other people on the boat. And they're like, we just don't have the room. There's nowhere to put them. Especially after we just took in three, and everything. So that did come up, but I don't remember the situation.
I think I just missed that one little conversation because there's so many conversations going on.
Yes, there are.
That might have been one I missed. Also, I had a question too. Did you guys? So I like that they didn't show the Germans and or the U-boat personnel and stuff. I mean, that was perfectly fine. I thought that made it more menacing. What did you guys think about the radio broadcast though?
It was a little much.
It's probably my least favorite part of the movie, actually.
I thought the first time it was kind of like, oh, that's kind of chilling. But then they do it again.
It's one of those things where we know they're the villain. We don't need to hear a cackling person over the radio, taunting them and everything. We don't need to hear
doing full on wolf calls.
We definitely didn't need that. I mean, it's sort of that whole like, you know, you really want these people to die. I get it. They want you to get on it, but I think the attacks themselves are what gets you into that moment.
Yeah.
And good God, man. It's been a while since I've actually like physically reacted to movies, but when they do get them, I actually like pump my fist. I don't do that shit. I just don't
imagine watching this on a 77 inch screen.
I know. I will later tonight when Aaron's not at home, but he's asleep. I mean,
you're gonna shoot down to Missouri.
I'm gonna just drive down to Missouri and
feel free, man.
In,
you're welcome.
Break in, watch it, and then go back out. I'm like, why is there broken glass?
Watch somebody really break into Aaron's house tonight.
Oh my God, that would be the worst.
Well, just so any potential intruders know, we do have cameras on all the doors. So,
good. Somebody who looks suspiciously like Chris came in though. Dude, I was here. I swear.
Just watching Greyhound and masturbating on our couch. I don't know what.
Look, dude. That's the how I roll, actually. Yeah.
No, you talk about the action in this movie. I did want to mention a couple things because it did a couple things I don't think I'd seen so clearly before. One is the artillery. I felt like I felt the artillery in this in a way I haven't felt it before in a movie. The idea of when the friendly fire kind of runs through their ship was incredible. The bullet that skipped off the water.
Yeah. And, I'd never seen that.
Yeah.
Never. Yeah. That, and you know, that's something that somebody has probably talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's ever like tried to put it in a movie before. And then and finally we have something like that, because I don't, and you know, I haven't looked into it. I'm sure it has happened, but it was really cool to see that on screen. It was really cool.
So there are a lot.
Yeah, did you say the torpedo bouncing off the ship too? They had, or they just missed it.
Yeah, I didn't mention that, but there are a lot of those moments like that where, you know, like the torpedo, you know, just kind of nudging off the ship, or where they had to, you know, watch a ship go past them and is it going to clear? Oh,
yeah.
It didn't quite clear, but it does clear, you know, like that kind of stuff in this movie. I just found, again, just so authentic. It just felt so real.
Well, and I don't think it's something, we just haven't seen it before. Like most of these movies are like, you know, Chris was saying, it's just more of a person. Part of what Chris was saying, but it's just more of a, I don't know. It's just more of a wide kind of thing. It's more broadened, where everything is kind of far apart. And, you know, we're looking at individuals doing doing certain things. And this was just like chaos, you know, 90 minutes of chaos, basically, or I guess 80 minutes by the time everything gets rolling.
Mm-hmm.
It was exciting.
Subs sneaking in under their fire, you know, close enough to them that they couldn't, you know, get their guns trained on them. That kind of stuff was just really cool.
Yeah, to think about something like that, because most of the time we're thinking that the combatants are always in range to shoot each other and everything, but they talk about minimum distances in here when it comes to like sonar and everything like that, and then here there's a point where they're shooting at them, but they can't angle the gun far enough down to hit them anymore. The other thing too I like is, there's a last resort moment in here. Everybody is running out of fuel. They have enough fuel to make the trip, but not with U-boats always running around and everything. They're 24 to 36 hours away from the point where air defense comes in, and you know, he doesn't want to do it, but I think in a way you're almost like, you feel like you're admitting failure when you call in help and everything. It's like, is there a way that I can take these boats somewhere in a short amount of time and you guys can come out and help us? Is another great moment in this movie for me. Because you know that most of the time when we follow the one man and only one man can do this, they figure some other weird thing out that, you know, we're just going to have to hunt them down. That's just the way it's going to have to be because we can't survive this. But he calls in the help, and you know, it a 24-hour trip, it takes about 3 hours to get to a spot where he needs to.
I was just thinking, like, when the U-boat like comes up, you know, Tom Hanks like jumps on it or something.
Yeah. And runs into and somehow pries open the door and like goes down there with his little pea shooter and starts blasting away.
But there are a lot of cool like little conversations like this that, I mean, you know, when you think about them afterwards, it's really cool. Like, they're so effective. But like, yeah, he's talking to the guy and he's just like, you know, I guess they didn't want to ask for help. B, they don't want the Germans to know the U-boats to know that they're in that dire of straits.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So they're going through that whole thing. Like, well, you don't need to say urgently because that help is urgent.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, then we can just say help. You know, it's just like that. It's just a really cool little moment.
Well, and not only
that, most of these movies wouldn't have.
Right. And not only the fact that use the correct terminology, but short enough that they can't pick up the message.
Yeah.
Stuff that I never have thought of before. There are so many things in this movie I've never seen before or heard before. That is a mark of a good movie to me. It's great. I love it. I can't wait to see it again.
Yeah, I can't, it just felt like a B. I don't know how else. I mean, like, I can't quite.
Look, I mean, Jonathan, you're wrong, obviously. Take the L.
I know. It's terrible for somebody just to like a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you just like this movie, do you really like movies if you only like this movie?
Also, I've noticed on Twitter a lot of people, like a lot of, in like some of these reviews I skim, people are calling this a dad movie. Does that term bother you, Aaron? That irritates the crap out of me when people say dad movie.
Okay, so I've thought a lot about this week too, because primarily this is coming from the website The Ringer, which I do listen to some of their podcasts and read a lot of their articles. And they did a huge thing on, you know, like the best dad movies, and they're talking about it in their podcasts and that kind of stuff. And then also, I think the Slash Film Cast also had a conversation about. So it's definitely in the air right now. So I've been thinking about it. It doesn't offend me. I get what people are saying, but there is an element of dismissiveness to it that I think feels a little icky. You know, there's an element of like, oh, dads who don't really understand plot and, you know, intricacies, and, you know, they just want, you know, action and heroes, and I'm just like, well, you know. I don't know that it's that simple.
Yeah. But also, how much are you and I thinking about World War II? Like, at this point, wouldn't this be a granddad movie? I mean, well, first off, like, I think it's incorrect.
Well. I mean, I don't think that when they bring that up, you know, that they're thinking of, they're thinking about the setting. It's just it's what happens.
No, I know.
But yeah, there used to be a thing on TBS called Movies for Guys Who Like Movies or whatever. And it was always Rambo and, you know, Cobra and all these movies that were, you know, they were always like a Friday or Saturday night that they would play them and everything. This movie isn't as dumb as those movies are. I mean, but I can see what they're saying. It's all about, you know, ooh, look at that, the technical aspects of a ship and all that. It's like, sure, I sure can't wait to watch this without my wife, you know, that type of thing.
Some people like just, you know, haven't just added. It's like I read a review on IndieWire that mentioned it. It was very much in a negative connotation. Like they were making fun of, it's kind of like how like hair metal, like kind of pisses off a lot of fans and a lot of the bands it pisses off, because it definitely, even if it started off as more of a fun thing, it started off very negative. It kind of turned into a fun thing. But it's not a big deal. I don't know. I just, every time I hear that, I just feel like it's like people are just dismissing the movie.
Well, and of course you've got other connotations like dad jokes or dad this or dad that. And so there is kind of an element of lowest common denominator to it that is a little bit dismissive, but I don't, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, to just dismiss this as one little, like a particular subgenre of an audience, only a particular audience can like this is kind of stupid to me. It's not a dumb movie. That's the thing. Like if it were dumb, like I could see, like you could say, well, this is a dad movie. You know, dad just wants to have
like
something.
Midway,
right? Like
the movie, Midway that just came out.
Exactly. That would be more along the lines of what they're saying there. And it always seems like to me, at this point, we're just trying to find some sort of fun angle, quote unquote, to write our think pieces on and everything. And this does not qualify as any particular, to me, doesn't qualify as only a subset of human being can enjoy this movie.
Well, you literally, know? Literally, this movie, Hunt for Red October, Das Boot, they're literally a subgenre of movies. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They literally are. That's right.
U571.
Yeah, yeah.
Dad jokes.
And earlier you called this shallow. So I mean, you know, a lot of things about this. So. All right. So what did you guys think about this movie? Go to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We're on SoundCloud and we're on Discord. And if you want to get on Discord, you can go to our Reddit page and find a link on the right side, or you can go to the Facebook and message me privately and I can give you a link there. Where can people find you, fine fellows?
You can reach me on Twitter at SamLoomis13. And Aaron and I, along with Danae Hughes, we do a little podcast every week called Behind the Sens that you can check out every Thursday.
If you love the Sins content and want to see kind of what goes on behind the scenes, yeah, check out Behind the Sins. We release that every week, and you can check out all that fun stuff.
All right, that'll do it for this mini pod. It's Chris Atkinson, Jonathan Watkins, and Aaron Dicer. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Yeah, what causes these weird, like, you know, like, changes whenever you do anything? Like, that's the weird... There's some sort of setting that you've got. That's the problem with computers, right? Is that you have a setting somewhere that does something like that. Like, if this happens, this is what we're going to do. But you don't know where the fuck that is to change it.
Yeah, digital things change. I had, I was watching, in fact, while I was watching Greyhound last week on my system down here with the sound bar and the surround, for whatever reason, I paused it. I went to the restroom or whatever, came back and unpaused it, and it was in stereo instead of 5.1. And I'm just messing. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Like, the soundbar says everything's right. It was just like, for whatever reason, the, you know, the streaming software was like, nah, we're going to send it in stereo now or whatever. I'm just like, all right, fine. Yeah. Whatever.
That'd be really funny if we did Old Guard first and then had Barrett on. Like, hey, let's do Greyhound, guys.
Just, yeah, just want to talk about Greyhound now. Like, was I supposed to watch Greyhound? Yeah, man.
Wait, didn't he say he hated it, or was he talking about Old Guard?
He said he hated Old Guard.
Oh, I thought he was talking about Greyhound.
He didn't need to even say that. Whenever Barrett says, I've got shit to say about that, he hates
that's
it.
That's code.
There's never...
There's never been a... Yeah, the last time he did that was with Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
By the way, recently also rewatched Cobra. Totally holds up. Not saying it's not dumb, but it totally holds up.
You joke, but I was thinking of, you know, maybe I should save this for the other review that we're doing today. Mm-hmm. But I'll go ahead and tell you there are movies that are dumb that I just enjoy. I rewatched Real Steel yesterday. Real Steel is a dumb movie. Like, that movie is cinnable as all get out. Like, it is dumb, but it is so much fun.
And it also kind of hits the emotions at times. Yeah. Right? Like, it's kind of sad.
And we, and we did send that movie.
We did.
Yeah. We send the shit out of it.
But my favorite part in going back to Cobra, my favorite part in Cobra is that when Stallone gets like early on in the movie, he goes home and we're supposed to see like how cool of a guy he is. And he pulls out an old pizza and it's like there's one slice of pizza in the box and he uses a fork and knife to cut off one. It's like a machete or something. He's got his fucking pocket. He uses it to cut off one little piece of pizza and like that's all he eats. It's like never ending story when he's eating takes a bite of the sandwich and he's like, no, I gotta save this.
Was that the movie that was supposed to be Beverly Hills Cop? And
I think the Stallone script for Beverly Hills Cop, I think there are things that are in Cobra. I think that's right.
Yeah,
maybe that's
like,
right.
It was like Stallone was supposed to be in Beverly Hills Cop and then stuff happened, so then they made it an Eddie Murphy vehicle, but then they still kept the script and like, let's turn this more into a Stallone thing, and they turned that into Cobra.
And it's also based on a book called Fair Game, which was actually made into another movie with Cindy Crawford.
Right.
And Stallone rewrote so much of the script and stuff and took away he actually wanted his name put on the book too.
Of course,
and the author was like, "No, we're not doing that."